We've been going through the book of Exodus, and we left off most of the way through Exodus chapter 20 last week, which is the place where God calls Israel together after he's brought them out of Egypt. He's led them through the wilderness. He's now feeding them and watering them, and there's a couple million people, and he tells Moses, we're coming to Mount Sinai, and you're going to get all the people. They're going to prepare themselves. They're going to come near the mountain, but they're not going to touch it. I'm going to come down on the mountain, and I'm going to speak to them. And he spoke to all the people, 2 to 3 million, with a PA system that we can't quite understand, but it literally put the fear of God into 2 million people, so I'm sure he was booming. And he spoke the Ten Commandments to them. Verse 17 is the last of those commandments where he talks about not coveting. That was the last thing they heard him say, don't covet. And in verse 18, it says, all the people saw the thunderings and the lightning and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and they stood afar off. And they said to Moses, speak thou with us and we'll hear, but let not God speak with us lest we die. We've heard the 10. If there's 11, we'll drop dead of a coronary. So no more commandments, Moses. He's awesome. He's wonderful. He's all yours. You talk to him and we'll do whatever you say. Of course, it's easy to say that, but... And Moses says to the people, fear not, for God has come to prove you, to show what's in your heart, really, and that his fear may be before your faces that you sin not. He's come to show you, to prove you, to show you who he is. And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near under the thick darkness where God was. And the Lord said unto Moses, thus shall you say unto the children of Israel, you have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. And then he says, you shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall you make unto you gods of gold. Now, that was part of the commandments, but he says, you shall not make with me gods of silver. You know, by the time we get to chapter 32, Moses is going to go up with Joshua on the mountain, and he's going to receive the stone tablets and all of the instructions from God, and he's up there for 40 days. And meanwhile, down at the bottom, these people who were saying, we'll do whatever you want us to do, we'll listen to you, Moses, his word is right, we're going to do it. 40 days later, they're thinking, where is this guy? Maybe he's dead. We don't know what to do. Aaron, do something for us. And Aaron, the first high priest, says, well, bring me your earrings. And so he melts it down, their earrings, and he makes this golden calf. He fashions it with a tool. And then he says to them, behold, Israel, these be your gods. He makes a golden calf, and he says, this is God. In fact, he says, we're going to have a feast tomorrow unto the Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, which is Yahweh, the name of God. He says, this calf is your God. This is what brought you out of Egypt. And God says, don't do that. That's not me. I'm not a cow. I'm not anything. You can't represent me with anything you carve or you make. Don't have any gods of silver. Don't make gods of gold. You want to make something? Verse 24, an altar of earth shall you make unto me. And you shall sacrifice thereon thy burnt offerings and thy peace offerings, thy sheep and thine oxen, and all the places where I record my name, I will come unto thee and I'll bless thee. And if you'll make me an altar of stone, you'll not build it of hewn stone, for if you lift up thy tool upon it, you've polluted it. Neither go thou up by steps unto my altar, that thy nakedness be not discovered thereon. He says, okay. And it's funny because he gives the Ten Commandments, right? This is what you should do. You do these things, you live. You keep my law, you live. And the people said, we'll do all of your commandments. And then he says, okay, now you're going to need to make an altar. Because when you sin and you're going to blow it, you're going to sacrifice. And so this, and it's funny, it's not like he says, well, I gave you the Ten Commandments, so there, go do it. I know you can do it. He says, no, I know you can't do it. And that's the point of the law, to show you my standard. And then when you don't measure up, let me show you how your sin can be covered. And he says, you want to make something, don't be carving images and worship those. You make an altar. And when you come to me, you bring a sacrifice. You need to have a substitution for you. Because someone has to pay for sin. And it's all a type and a shadow of the substitution that he will provide. It's got to be without spot or blemish. And he says, when you do it, make it out of dirt. The altar, just a pile of dirt. But if you're going to use rock, make it unhewn. Just take some rocks like you find them, and you just pile them up and do it on that. Don't carve something ornate, because he knows us. He knows we're going to want to. we're going to make it fancy, right? You know, we can't just have something useful in our house. It has to be decorative. And we can't just worship God in a useful way. It has to be ornate, because we want to put our flair on it. Because anyone can worship God on a pile of rocks. But my altar, I mean, isn't he going to receive my... Because look what I did. It's beautiful. I put gold on it. I mean, if he's going to come down and get dead cow, does he want it off a dirty old rock? Or does he want it off one that's carved with his name in it? And a picture of a little golden cow on the side that just makes it all pop, you know, just ties it together. And he says, I don't want your hands on it. I don't want you doing anything, because truthfully, the only reason why it would be acceptable is that it's without blemish, because it's going to point to my son. I don't want your hands on it. I don't want man stink on it, basically, is what he's saying. Stay out of it, because you can't do anything to make it more acceptable. Your works are not acceptable. It's what I am going to do. It's the sacrifice that's going to do it. That's why Jesus said, it is finished, and you cannot add to it. Now, we come to chapter 21, and he's given the Ten Commandments, and now he's going to expound on those Ten Commandments and kind of give them a little more meat, I guess, on how some of these things will pan out. And, you know, it's interesting. He's going to start out, and the first thing he's going to talk about are servants or slaves. And I like that God aims right for the bottom, okay? He's going to the lowest of the low in that society would be the servants or the slaves. He says, now, these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years shall he serve, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. So what? God's good with slavery? Is that what that's saying? He's all about slaves. No. However, in that culture, it had been practiced for a very long time. All over the world, slavery was practiced. He is saying to them, it's going to be different among you. When one of your brethren goes into servitude, and see, they didn't have bankruptcy then. You couldn't pay your debts. You became your debt, and you worked and you paid off. And he said, you know, if someone is in that position where they need to become a servant to pay off their debts, you can't own them. They will work for you 6 years. Seventh year, he goes out free, and he doesn't have to buy his freedom. His working for you for 6 years pays for his debt, and it pays for his freedom. He's free to go. You cannot have permanent slaves out of your brothers. If he came in by himself, he'll go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master has given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. And if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife, my children, I will not go out free, then his master shall bring him unto the judges. He shall also bring him to the door, unto the doorpost, and his master shall bore through his ear with an awl. That's nice. And he shall serve him forever. What he's saying is, if someone goes into servitude, now, those of you who have experienced financial problems, it's not a fun place to be. I mean, that's, you know, for those of us who are married, one of the number one things that you argue about is money. Money places incredible stress on a marriage. Nobody chooses to be broke or to go bankrupt. I mean, people maybe do things sometimes that are poor choices that bring them there, but nobody says, you know, I think bankruptcy would be the way to go. I'm just going to, you know, do something stupid. I mean, it happens, but not willingly. And it's no fun. It's not a fun place to be. He says, but if he goes in to servitude and he ends up serving this master, he does his 6 years with him. In his life that's fallen apart or been a wreck when he ended up going into servitude, while he's under that master, he finds out, this guy loves me. This guy's been providing for me. When I came into his house, I had enough. In fact, I got a wife and I got kids. I got a life while I was serving this guy. When I'm on my own, I wrecked things. I had nothing. When he's taking care of me and I'm serving him, I have a life. I think I'll stay. He said, well, this is what you can do. Then you can go, and you go, he says, in front of the You go before the judges, the witnesses, because this is not something that a master is going to grab somebody and put a ring in his ear and say, ha-ha, see, he promised to be mine forever. No, we need witnesses. But if this is a voluntary thing, if he says that he wants to do it, then he's going to go to a doorpost or, and he's going to put an awl through his ear and put basically the house ring, the family seal, in an earring in his ear. And he'll voluntarily lay down his will forever to serve that master. He's found the right master. Now, it's interesting because there's some passages in Scripture. Psalm 40, verse 6 says this: sacrifice and offering you did not desire. My ears you have opened. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required. Then said I, lo, I come. And in the volume of the book, it's written of me. Who was the volume of the book written of? Well, Christ. That you've opened my ears, that Christ as a voluntary servant laid down his will to God the Father. In Isaiah chapter 40, verse 6, it says, Isaiah 50, see, I told you I didn't print my notes out today. Isaiah chapter 50, verse 6, he says this: I gave my back to the smiters and my cheeks to them that plucked off the hair. We know who that's talking about, right? Well, if you look at the verse before that, in verse 5, the Lord God has opened my ear, and I was not rebellious, neither turned away back. I gave my back to the smiters, my cheeks to them that plucked out the hair. I hid not my face from the shame and the spitting. That Jesus was a voluntary servant. And this little picture in the law of the servant who wants to stay with his master is a picture of Christ submitting his will perfectly to the Father. Now, some more expounding on the law. Verse 7, if a man sell his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. If she please not her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her into a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he has dealt deceitfully with her. If a man is in debt and he thinks, well, I can pay this off without becoming a servant myself. I got these kids, and I got a daughter. And it's actually... he's selling his daughter here to someone who is going to betroth himself to it. Almost as if a guy comes along and says, I tell you what, I'll give you a nice dowry. You sell me your daughter for a wife. Well, if he does that, and then once the guy buys her to be his wife to pay off the debt, and then he decides he doesn't like her, let her be redeemed. Let her dad buy her back. He can't just sell her off into slavery to a strange nation, seeing he's dealt deceitfully with her. If he's betrothed her unto his son, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. That you can't just treat her unfairly. She's not a slave to you. She is your daughter-in-law. If he takes another wife, polygamy practiced in that culture, her food and her raiment and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. And if he do not these three unto her, then she shall go out free without money. That you can't take another wife and just abandon or abuse the first one. I'm really glad we don't live in that culture, to be honest with you. You know, when you look at a lot of these things, people say, oh, see, God is promoting polygamy. No, he's not. In fact, he's saying, okay, if you're going to do this, this is how you're going to do it. You're going to treat fairly with people. Even in the whole issue of divorce came up. God's designed from the beginning, one man, one woman for life, divorce. But because of hardness of heart, he gave rules governing, okay, if you're going to divorce, this is the grounds by which you can do it. This is how it has to happen. In the Old Testament, it was, you need to do it, and you need to do it officially so that this woman is free. I mean, all of these things, there are protection for people in this. It says in verse 12, he that smites a man so that he die shall be surely put to death. Now, this is a little more definition on what he'd said back in chapter 20, verse 13, thou shalt not kill or commit murder. He says, if someone kills a man, if he murders him, he'll be put to death. But notice this, and if a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place where he shall flee. He said, if someone seeks to murder someone, death penalty. You know, it goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 9, where God instituted capital punishment and government, and he basically said that if a man sheds another man's blood, then by man his blood shall be shed, that he will have to pay for the life that he took with his own. But here he's saying, but if if one man kills another one, but he wasn't lying in wait, it was actually, he said, God delivered him into his hand. If it was an act of God, you're out in the woods, you're chopping wood, you pull that axe back, and the head flies off and kills another guy. It was an accident. I didn't intend to do it. I'm sorry. He says, in those cases where it was involuntary manslaughter, where something happened that was an accident, he says, I'll give you a place where you can flee. Now, they're going to be called cities of refuge. They're talked about in Numbers chapter 35 a lot. Basically, if someone was murdered in your family or killed in your family, it would be the duty of a member of your family in that culture to be what they called the avenger of blood, where you would have to go out and you would have to make justice happen by finding the person who murdered the one and killing them yourself. That's what you were supposed to do. But in cases where it was a involuntary manslaughter, he set up these cities of refuge, and the person who had done it would immediately flee for the city of refuge. And if he gets to the city of refuge, the judge of that city would examine the matter and find out whether he really murdered him or whether it really was an accident. And if it was an accident, then he could stay in that city and the avenger of blood couldn't touch him. He was safe inside the city of refuge. If he ever stepped out of the city of refuge, he was fair game and he could be killed. He was only safe if he was inside the city of refuge. And there was another provision there that once the high priest died, whoever was high priest, as long as that high priest was alive, that was the case. But once he died, that guy, his debt would be canceled, and he could leave the city of refuge. Now, all through that, and we'll talk about it when we eventually get there again, there's types of Christ, that he is our refuge, and we can flee to him, and we can get away from the avenger of blood, that we're safe as long as we're in him, and that our high priest has died, so we're set free. And he's never going to die again. So, I mean, there's really cool stuff in there. But he's drawing a distinction between murder and manslaughter. He says in verse 14, if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor, that's deliberately premeditated, to slay him with guile, you shall take him from my altar that he may die. There's no running to church for sanctuary when you've murdered somebody. And he that smites his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. They put a lot of focus on honoring your father and mother, smacking them around, hurting them, not acceptable. He that steals a man and sells him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. I like that law. Kidnapping, you mess with my kids, capital offense. I'm okay with that. I mean, that's, well, God's got kids too, right? You know, that's why he says anybody tries to lead you after another god, basically take you from me and sell you to some other god, no, get him. He that curses his father or mother shall surely be put to death. Children, how many times would you be stoned if you were in the Old Testament? How you should be thanking God. All those times under your breath, your parents would hear it, drag you out to the gates. Did you hear what that little monster said? Grab the rocks. And again, Old Testament law for the Jews. If, verse 18, if men strive together, and one smites another with a stone or with his fist, and he die not, but he keeps his bed, and if he rises again and walks abroad upon his staff, then he that smote him shall be quit. In other words, he'll be let off. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. Two guys throw down. One of them gets the better of the other one and wounds him. If he kills him, it's, you know, there's penalties for that. But if the guy's just hurt for a while, he's laid up in bed, but he gets back again, this guy, he's absolved of that. There's no more guilt to it. But he does have to pay for the damage that he did and what he cost that guy in wages when he beat him up. Doesn't say that society has to pay for his wages. It doesn't say that, you know, the church has to pay for his wages. He says the person who did it, he's responsible to make good what he did. Very good. We're going to see as we go through this. Some of this is like, I can't believe that the God of all the earth has to spend time telling people this kind of stuff. But he does. He sinks down to the level where we're at because he knows us. If a man smite his servant or his maid with a rod and he dies under his hand, surely he shall be punished. Now, contrast that with Rome, where there were 60 million slaves. There were more slaves than citizens, and they were property. If you woke up in the morning and you felt like it, you could kill him and bury him in the yard, and nobody would care. Not in Israel. They're not just property, they're people. Notwithstanding, if he continue a day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. So if he hurts them, no death penalty there. If men strive, check this one out, and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow. Two guys are fighting. One of them, you know, pushes the other one, or he throws a chair at the guy, and the guy dodges, and it hits a pregnant lady. And she goes into labor. She gives birth right there, prematurely. Her fruit departs from her. But the baby's okay. No mischief follows. Well, he'll be punished, according as the woman's husband will lay on him, and he'll pay as the judges determine. But if any mischief follow, then you shall give life for life. If a woman is pregnant, and some two guys are fighting, and one accidentally does something that ends a woman's pregnancy, in God's law, you've just killed a life. You haven't disposed of a tissue mass. You haven't removed a clump of cells. You've killed a baby. And in God's eyes, that's life for life. I don't know if you saw this article this week. One of my friends sent this to me. I don't know why, if he was just trying to get me ugly or what he was doing. About a woman in Portland, Oregon, I think. Yeah. On the June 2007th day their daughter was born, Ariel and Deborah Levy were overcome with excitement, then shock when the hospital staff told them that their daughter looked like she had Down syndrome. A doctor asked Deborah Levy if she'd had a prenatal test, the chorionic virus sampling, or CVS for short, and Levy said yes, the results showed they'd have a normal, healthy child. Within days of her birth, however, a blood test confirmed that the little girl, Kalanit, had Down syndrome. The Levys filed suit against Legacy Health, claiming that Deborah Levy would have aborted her pregnancy had she known her daughter had the chromosomal abnormality. So they're suing for $3 million because they would have killed that child if they would have known ahead, and so it was a wrongful birth suit. I just don't understand. I'm sorry. As one who has a child that has chromosomal abnormality, I do not understand why someone would say, you should pay because it would have been better if I'd have known I could have stopped this life. Crazy. God's pretty clear what he thinks about life in the womb here and in other places in the scripture. He must have sent it to me to get me God. I don't know why else he would have. Oh, are you kidding me? The trial should last all of 30 seconds. Bailiff, take that child from those monsters and send them away. That should be the end of the trial, as far as I'm concerned. Well, anyway, sorry. Pray for me. He says in verse 24, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. In other words, justice, impartial. Let the time fit the crime. If a man smite the eye of his servant or the eye of his maid, that it perishes, he gets mad at his servant, smacks him in the face, he loses an eye, he shall let him go free for the eye's sake. Master's out playing with that Red Ryder BB gun. He just, it's an eye. No, he says, yeah, that's, he says, if he smite out his manservant's tooth, he gets mad at his servant, he belts him and he knocks a tooth out. He shall let him go free for his tooth's sake. I don't weigh those two the same, personally. I mean, if I was a servant and I wanted to get out of 6 years of servitude, I'd be tempted to knock my own tooth and just keep it in the socket, you know, provoke my master. See, oh, it's a tooth. You got to let me go. Be worth 6 years of my life for a tooth. If he smite out his manservant's tooth or his maidservant's tooth, he shall let him go free. If an ox gore a man or a woman that they die, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and his flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be quit. If someone has an animal and it kills somebody, put the animal down. But if the ox were wont, like the King James, wont to push with his horn in times past, if it's a bad ox, everybody knows, stay away from that ox. It's bad, man. That thing, there's animals that try to get people, right? I mean, if you're going to write this today, you'd probably say, if a man hath a pit bull. And it's mean, as they pretty much all are. And it's been warned that this thing's dangerous. It's been testified to his owner, and he has not kept him in. But he that has killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and the owner shall be put to death. The owner should know better. It's a responsibility. If there be laid on him a sum of money, then he shall give for the ransom of his life whatsoever is laid upon him. Whether he have gored a son or gored a daughter, according to his judgment, it shall be done unto him. If the ox shall push a manservant or a maidservant, if this guy has an ox and it doesn't kill this other guy's son or daughter, but it kills one of his servants, he shall give unto their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. The price of a gored slave is 30 shekels of silver. Do you know of any other slaves in the Bible who ended up gored for 30 shekels of silver? I think that's what Judas got, wasn't it? If a man shall open a pit, he digs a well, he's digging a cistern or something like that, or a man shall dig a pit, and he doesn't cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls in, the owner of the pit shall make it good, give money to the owner of them, but the dead beast will be his. So at least he gets some stake out of the deal, right? You dig a hole, somebody else's animal falls in it, you got to pay for the animal, but you get to keep the dead one. Just good common sense stuff that people need to know. If one man's ox hurt another's, did he die? Ox fight. Oxen don't get along, the horns come out, one of them dies. They'll take the live one and sell it, divide the money, and then they'll cut up the dead one and split the pieces so they can both have steak. Just fair. Or if it be known that the ox has used to push in time past, the owner has not kept him in, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead shall be his own. Now, we're going to keep going through some of these. If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. But he told them not to steal, right? Why would he even have to write this? Because he told them not to steal, and they all said they wouldn't steal, so why even put... Because he knows us and that we'll steal. And he has to say, this is the deal. You steal somebody's ox. Now, in that culture, that's more than just an animal. That's like your tractor, right? Because you plow with the ox. Imagine if the penalty for stealing something was to pay back 5 times. That sounds like a deterrent to crime, right? Shouldn't it be in our society? I would think it would be. If an ox, you got to pay back 5. For a sheep, 4. If a thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he dies, well, he should have known better. It says there shall be no blood shed for him. If someone breaks into your house, and the idea with this, because the next one says this, if the sun will be risen upon him, there shall no be blood shed for him. He should make full restitution. If he have nothing, then he should be sold for his theft. If he's found breaking in someplace and they kill him in the process, then the person who did it, he's absolved. Because you don't know the guy's intention. He could have been breaking in to kill you or to hurt you. So if you in self-defense defend your home, oh well, he should have known better. But if the sun shall rise upon him, there shall be bloodshed for him. In other words, if it's daytime and you realize he's breaking into your house to steal your ox and you kill him anyways, no, you can't kill. That starts getting towards premeditated there. That's voluntary manslaughter. If the guy does that, he needs to make restitution. And if he has nothing, he'll be sold for his theft. And if the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it's a donkey or an ox or a sheep, he'll restore double. So if he takes your stuff, and he's basically saying, look, if somebody breaks in and you don't know what's going on and you kill him in defense, that's okay. You can defend your family, defend your house, that's fine. But if he's breaking in to steal and you can see him, you just can't kill him in broad daylight to teach him a lesson. You don't have to do that, because if he still has the stuff, you're going to get it back and he's going to pay double. We just said that if he gets rid of it by the time you get to him, you get 5 times back. And if he can't afford to pay any of that stuff back, then he'll be sold to pay the debt, okay? So God's going to take care of you, so don't just be casually murdering folk who are thieves. If a man shall cause a vineyard, a field or a vineyard to be eaten, and shall put in his beast, and shall feed in another man's field, of the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard shall he make restitution. Okay, here's a guy, and his neighbor goes away, and he thinks, you know, my horse is kind of hungry, and I don't want him to eat all my stuff, so I'm just going to kind of open the gate and let him graze in the neighbor's field, and he eats all his stuff. Well, then this guy will have to pay back his neighbor. Why does he have to tell us that? Because God knows people's hearts, and their tendency would be, if I can, you know, throw this bag of garbage over into my neighbor's lawn when he's not looking and not have to go to the dump, I'll do it. If I can put one over on my neighbor, that's the way people are. I told you last week about the one that... you know, basically says if your neighbor is asleep, don't go out at night and move the landmarks. Basically, the stakes that mark his yard to increase your territory. There's another one that says if you wake up in the morning and there's a mouse that's died in the jar where you hold your meal, break the jar. Don't like clean it up and give it away, but actually, because he knows that's the type of people that we are. He actually has to tell people, if you find something that's had some death in it, don't just pass it on to somebody else, you know? Ooh, I don't want that chair anymore. Somebody, you know, one of my kids got really sick in it or went incontinent. But someone might want it, so I'll put it out for $10 on the front yard and maybe I'll make it. No. Love your neighbor as yourself. If you won't sit in it, they probably wouldn't either. If a fire breaks out, catches in thorns so that the stacks of corn, the standing of corn, or the field be consumed therewith, he that kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. Smokey the Bear likes this. He says, hey, you set a forest fire, you destroy somebody's field, you pay for their grain that you destroyed. If a man shall deliver unto his neighbor money or stuff, they had stuff back then too, imagine that, money or stuff to keep, and it be stolen out of the man's house, if the thief be found, let him pay double. If the thief isn't found, then the master of the house shall be brought unto the judges to see whether he's put his hand into his neighbor's goods. You tell your neighbor, I'm going away, could you watch my stuff? You come back and the neighbor says, somebody stole your stuff. They broke into my house and stole your stuff. Okay, if they find the thief, that guy's got to pay double. If they don't find the thief, you go down to the judge. And they examine this guy and they probably get a warrant and go through his house and see. Because if he's stealing your stuff, then he needs to pay. But if not, he'll be put free. For all manner of trespass, whether it be for an ox or a donkey or sheep or for raiment or any manner of lost thing which another challenges to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges. In whom the judges shall condemn, he shall pay double unto his neighbor. Interesting, the word judges here, if you look at it in the Hebrew, it's Elohim, which is the word for gods, plural. And the reason why is they believe that the judges were standing in the place of God. And I really believe that too. I believe that the judges in our land are standing in the place of God. That's what they're called to do. I know when Joel was before the judge and I got a chance to address him, you know, I told him, we've been praying for you. We trust you because we know you're standing in the place of God, and this is your responsibility, and you're put there. The Bible tells us that they're the ministers for good. I wish they would all act that way. They don't a lot of times. For all manner of trespass, whether it be, I read that one, verse 10, if a man deliver unto a neighbor a donkey or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep it, and it dies or be hurt or driven away, no man seeing it, then shall an oath of the Lord be put between them both. He that has not put his hand unto his neighbor's goods, and the owner shall accept thereof, and he shall not make it good. If he swears, nobody knows the difference, it's his word against his, he swears that it was good, then that guy should accept his word. And if it be stolen from him, he shall make restitution unto the owner thereof. If it be torn to pieces, he leaves his donkey over there for the night, the guy puts it out to field, and he comes in and it's in pieces because a lion got it, well, let him bring it for a witness, and he'll not make good that which was torn. If he brings in pieces of a shredded donkey, then you know that he's telling the truth. If a man borrow aught of his neighbor, and it be hurt or die, the owner thereof being not with it, he shall surely make it good. But if the owner thereof be with it, he shall not make it good. If it be a hired thing, he came for his hire. If you hire a guy to come work your field with his ox, and he's there, if you just hire the ox and you're taking care of it and the thing breaks a leg or gets hurt, you got to pay the guy back. But if he's coming and he's working the ox, you're paying him as a hired laborer, and he runs his own ox into a pit and breaks its leg, well, that's part of the cost of doing business. You got to maintain your own equipment. Just like we do today, right? He says, verse 16, if a man entice a maid that he's not betrothed and lie with her, he shall surely endow her to be his wife. This is the biblical mandate for the shotgun wedding right here. But if the father utterly refuses to give him, no, I don't care what you did to her, you're a moron, and I'm not going to punish her for the rest of her life for what you just did to her. He shall pay money according to the dowry of virgins. Little one-off verse, verse 18, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Doesn't talk about, you know, white witches and dark witches. It doesn't matter whether you're the Wicked Witch of the West or Glinda the Good Witch. You're practicing witchcraft, false religion, not going to happen in Israel. Whoever lies with a beast shall surely be put to death. Bestiality, not so. And of course, the Canaanites, the Egyptians, many of the people around them did some horrible things. He that sacrifices to any god save the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed. Thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. If you have people who are strangers, foreigners, don't take advantage of them. You were strangers and foreigners, and that was your salvation when you went in there underneath Joseph. So you should remember that and treat them fairly. Notice this, you shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any wise and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows and your children fatherless. You don't mess with the poor and the widows. Why is that? Well, in Psalm 68, verse 5, it says this, speaking, singing of the Lord, while verse 4 says, sing unto God, sing praises of his name, extol him that rides upon the heavens by his name, Yah, and rejoice before him. Verse 5, he's a father to the fatherless, and a judge of the widows is God in his holy habitation. He says, if there is someone whose husband has died, whose father has died, I will step in and take their place. Don't mess with my kids. That's what he says. My wrath will wax hot. I can say that, and I'm just, you mess with my kids and my wrath waxes hot. God the Father, who can make the mountain smoke and the earthquake and all of that, think about that. He has a special place in his heart. You know, and we had Mike come this morning, those of you who are here this morning, Mike Warman from Safe Families for Children, and his ministry, if you weren't here to hear it or you were and you didn't understand what he was talking about, basically, they try to step in and help families who are going through difficult times before it gets so bad that DHS has to step in. If a woman is in trouble and she needs a place to go for a night, they need someone because of whatever reason, they need someone to watch their kid. Dad got busted for OUI and he's going to be in jail for a couple days and they need someone to help watch the kid, someone to just give him a ride to the doctors, whatever. They try to come in and minister to people in those situations. And a lot of times, they are women who have been left, whether through death or just through abandonment, so they're effectually a widow, and their children who are orphans because one parent or the other wants nothing to do with them. And I think there's a special blessing of God on people who take up the cause of the widows and the orphans. And so I would encourage you, we have the information, I can get it for you, it's Safe Families for Children, but it's a great ministry. If you lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, you shall not be to him as a usurer, neither shall you lay upon him usury. If you're going to lend money to somebody who's one of your brothers, don't rip them off. Don't charge them interest. If you take at all take thy neighbor's raiment to pledge, you got the guy who's so poor, and he has nothing but the clothes on his back, and he says, look, I'll pay you back tonight. I'm working today. I just need a few bucks. I'll give you my jacket. Take my jacket, and then you can give it back to me when I give you the money back. Well, if you do that, you give it back to him by the time the sun goes down, for that's his covering only. It is his raiment for his skin. Wherein shall he sleep? It shall come to pass when he cries unto me that I will hear, for I am gracious. You don't take advantage to your brother. If he's got to pledge his, if he's so poor, he's got to pledge his jacket to you. If he can't pay you back by the end of the day, give him his jacket back. It's his home. It's all he has. He says, you shall not revile the gods, and that's really the judges, same word, nor curse the ruler of thy people. Show respect to the office. Even if you have a hard time respecting the person, show respect to the office. You shall not delay to offer the first of your ripe fruits and of your liquors. The firstborn of your son shall you give unto me. Likewise shall you do with your ox and with your sheep. 7 days it shall be with his dam, and on the eighth day you shall give it to me. And you, last verse, shall be holy men unto me. And I'll include holy women. Neither shall you eat any flesh that's torn of beasts in the field. You shall cast it to the dogs. Al, don't eat roadkill. That's what he's saying. Because he's calling them to be holy, to be set apart, to be different. You find something that's just dead because it died, There's probably some reason. Things die for a reason. If it's so old that it died of old age, you probably don't want it anyways. And if it's young and it died from a disease, why would you eat that? Because you could catch the disease. Stay away from the death of the world, lest you infect yourself. And I think there's a bigger point to that, you and I. There's a lot of stuff in this world that leads to death. There's sin that leads to death. Don't mess with it. Why infect yourself? Because you're supposed to be holy. You're supposed to be different. Here, I'll finish with this verse. It's from 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1. Does it make you feel good to see how slow I am turning from verse to verse? It's the reason why I write these down. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 1. Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Let's pray. Father, we thank you that you are a holy God, that you are righteous, and that you are gracious, as you said. Lord, my prayer is that you would inspire us to be holy, give us the strength to remain holy. And Lord, help us to be those who love, who are gracious to others, because we've been forgiven much. When we look for you to return, come quickly, I pray, and bless these people this week. Give them your strength. I ask in Jesus' name, amen. Grace and peace, guys.